I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. Today, I'm here to take another look at Fist of the North Star because I still don't know what's going on with this thing at all. This time, I have Andrew Mecca-Davis from Pop Anime Comics here to try to help me out with that. Andrew, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
I always like finding new people to have on here. It's nice when I can go on the Facebook groups and, you know, have somebody who actually knows what the show is and wants to come on and not just somebody who's blasting everything because they want to come talk about their business that they're starting.
I don't know if I'm going to provide much light on what's going on with this show, but I did play the game, so we might be confused equally with what's going on. But Fist of the Northern Star is one of those shows that it's okay to be confused.
I really hope it's okay to be confused because I don't think that's ever really going to stop for me. And it seems like it's such a simple concept. Dystopian world, dude goes and punches the hell out of everybody. The end.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is, but it gets confusing, and then there's politics, and then anime sometimes makes it clean, and sometimes they make it dirty, for lack of a better word, and I'm an anime fan, and so I've been watching anime for like probably 15 to 17 years, and I'm still confused on this one in particular. So don't worry, it's okay, everybody, to be confused.
Well, what got you into Fist of the North Star?
It's one of those shows that is kind of, I don't want to say it's a legendary show, and it's not one of like the must-see animes, but it is spoken about very highly, and it is one of those shows that's just, I guess, what, I don't want to say it's a main staple, but it has that idea, and it's kind of classical anime. And I like to immerse myself into classical anime going back. I think Fist of the North Star came out late 70s, early 80s. And it's one of those shows that, like, if you're an anime fan, and I'm sort of an old school classical anime fan, as well as some new stuff, that you need to watch it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I definitely like knowing where things are coming from. So, you know, we've got all this new stuff that I'm sure people have taken this as some bit of an inspiration for them. And I don't want to just see the inspiration that comes from these things. I want to actually see these things.
Yeah, and so for me, a lot of this stuff, so there's a show called One Punch Man, and it's a little bit of a diversion, but I feel like One Punch Man was built on Fist of the Northern Star with the concept. I mean, we were saying that, you know, I don't know if we said it on air or before, but this show really is punching the bad guys and keep on punching the bad guys. And One Punch Man is in the title. I mean, obviously it's a little bit more complicated, but I feel like there's a bunch of shows that were built off of Fist of the Northern Star. And therefore, it's good to know where the original idea came from and then how it evolved from there.
So I have not actually read the manga for this one because I don't know. I've had a lot of stuff to read lately. So I stuck with just watching the anime.
I've read pieces of the manga. I am not the manga expert on this one, but I am more familiar with the anime in that realm. I'm probably 60% through it. So, but I know where it ends. I mean, I'm a spoiler guy to that point, but even still, I mean, it's pretty simple to know where it goes. If you've seen the anime and you've seen enough of it, it's pretty basic. Or if you've seen anything like Dragon Ball Z, you get an idea of where Fist of the Northern Star is going.
So really, it seems like this one is more about the journey rather than the destination.
Yeah, I think that's a really good accurate statement. I'm going to echo that a lot. And it's still fun, though, and it's classic, like, 80s anime. And it's not a bad show, but it's confusing. And there's a lot of intricate moving parts that might not have anything necessarily bring value, if that makes any sense, to it.
And I know we've said this is confusing a lot, but it's not the kind of confusing to where I'm sitting here and I don't want to keep watching it. It's the kind of confusing where, oh, hey, I didn't know that was going on. I don't remember this person from before, which that might not sound like much of a difference hearing me say it like that. But I like things that don't just spoon feed me every little bit of information.
Yeah, I think when I say it's confusing is that there's a lot of intricate parts. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of stuff going on politically in the world that is not explained. And I'll say this openly, 80s anime versus 2020 anime, you know, it 2020 anime is cleaner as explaining a lot of stuff. The storytelling as a whole has evolved. And it's not just anime, it's everything. Video games too, in many ways, where if you look at the 1980s, the storytelling wasn't as crisp as it is today. And I think that's where the problem with Fist of the Northern Star lies, is that it's not as crisp. And I think if they were to do it in 2020, it'd be a cleaner product, a more refined product. Some of this intricacy where saying, oh, who is this person? And why are they fighting with this person or against this person? Where 3 episodes ago, they weren't even in this, like the anime or the game or anything like that, would be more closely explained.
So do you think in the 80s they were making it assuming people had read the manga?
I think part of it was that, and I also think that part of it is that they just wanted to churn out anime, because I was on another show and somebody gave me this idea where I think in the 1980s, Japan really was expanding, and anime is their Hollywood in many ways. And I think they just had a big anime boom. Gundam had just come out. That was massively successful. And so I just think they were just turning out stuff, and they're like, oh man, we can do this now. We have the technology. Let's throw everything in the kitchen sink. And I think they got a bit sloppy. And I think part of it was that they were assuming people were reading the manga, but I also think they were like, hey, we just need to do this because in the 1980s in America, there was a big cartoon boom. And I think Japan had an even bigger one. And so I think that was part of it, where if we go back to the 1980s, there's a lot of anime being turned out. And I just think that they're like, boom, let's get this done, move on to the next one. Boom, let's get this done, move on to the next one. And you get lazy when you're producing, you know, let's say they were producing, you know, 15,000 episodes a year. You're going to get lazy on certain shows.
It seems to me like there could have been a lot of writers making jumps in their logic and assuming that the viewers would be following along with them, and just kind of forgetting to put in that little detail that makes everything connect nice and cleanly.
Yeah, I think that's it too. And also I think that, you know, it gets also more complicated, because when you go from manga, for those who don't know, and I'm going to make an assumption, but I'm going to also start at ground zero, is comics in Japan. And when you take something and then you turn it into a anime, which is a cartoon in Japan, you're going to lose some translation. So I think the manga explains things a little bit cleaner, and it's not perfect, but it's a little bit cleaner. But I think you lose some translation, you lose some explanatory positions, because when you're animating something, you know, if one panel can explain a big concept in a comic book or in a manga, but to animate that might cost a certain amount of money. It might cost a certain amount of time. It might make the show go from 150 episodes to 160, because you now need to revamp everything and reanalyze and move things around. And it's really more complicated to move things around on an anime level versus in a comic, if that makes any sense to anybody.
No, it definitely makes sense to me. No, in comics, you can get those little explainer boxes in there.
Yeah, and you could put also in a comic, you could just put a forward in many ways to explain something. Or let's say that in manga, you know, maybe you have like a one-page thing at the back that explains a concept that, especially in like a manga book or a graphic novel, whatever we're going to call it, maybe you have like in a letter column, you can explain a concept of something that you can't do in an anime. And I think that's part of the reason why Fist of the Northern Star is so confusing, is because I think they're also much more limited, because I think comics aren't, you know, cheap to produce right now in America. It's about, I think, anywhere from 10 to 12 grand to produce an American comic book per issue. And manga is a little bit cheaper because it's in black and white. It also comes out weekly, and it also is sold weekly. But And so I think that's also the other thing as well. But then when we go to an animation, well, anime is expensive. And even if it's done cheaply, it's still pricey, where it's a lot more than producing a manga book per episode. And it's probably a lot more than 12 grand in American dollars right now to produce an episode of anime.
So my main Fist of the North Star experience before coming into this, much like with the previous episode, was watching that animated movie. Because I just felt like, with me, the time crunch I have with stuff, getting that condensed version there was the best bet. So it sounds like you've been watching through the episodic series. I mean, how much more do you get out of that versus the movie?
I mean, you get more detail by natural positioning, you get more content, you sort of get more of a holistic journey of it, you get more of taking your time with it, and so that's something that you get out of the episodic series. And also there's other filler stuff and there's other information. You also get more of a feel for the character, you know, in an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending on the movie. I don't think that for the main characters in Fist of the Northern Star, the good guys, the bad guys, that you get much of a feel for them beyond that. You know, this person is good, this person is bad, and they have obviously a mission to beat the bad guy. But I feel invested through the episodic series where, and this is with just television in general, is that when you're associating with somebody and you're with them for five seasons, you feel like they're in your living room. You know, you, with the episodic thing, I'm like on that journey, or I'm watching the journey from behind, not as a spectator on the battlefield, if that makes any sense, with Fist of the Northern Star. And so I feel invested. I feel like I have a personal stake in it versus the movie, because I've seen the movie as well, and I just don't feel like I have a personal stake in it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you get somebody like Batman or Spider-Man, you can do a movie that's its own thing because we already are invested in those characters. I mean, especially over here, we weren't, and I especially wasn't invested in Fist of the North Star at all. So all I had was that little bit of character development they could fit into the movie. And there's only so much you can do with that while you also needed to go around and punch everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Not to say the movie isn't bad. If you're just looking for something to enjoy, and you can enjoy the movie without having anything to deal with it, and you'll still get something out of it. I mean, you're going on that journey, you get the sense of the journey, you also get the sense of just the punching. So if you're looking for an anime that's all about punching and just sort of how much more power can we go, and oh my god, he's flipping a tank with his fist, you know, or he's punching through a tank, right? It's fun to watch that. And if you're looking for something and you don't want to think too hard, Fist of the Northern Star is great for that. But then when you start diving deeper into it, it gets a little bit more complicated. And also, if you're not paying attention, you're going to get lost really quickly in the episodic stuff. And if you don't have an idea of where it's going, you know, you're going to get lost as well in it. But I don't have any complaints about the movie. If people just want to get a glimpse of what we're talking about and they go see the movie, you're going to get something out of it, and you're going to get the basic concept out of it. The movie gives you the basic concept of what the episodic stuff does.
Yeah, I feel like as a worst case, the movie is, hey, you think you might want to get into Fist of the North Star, watch the movie because that's a 2-hour investment, versus, hey, watch the series where you're going to have to keep going and going and going.
Which is about a 45 to 50 hour investment. So if you want to spend the extra 48 hours, you know, if we might guess, then you know, it's the real people like me. I'm a big anime fan and I love anime and I've been watching forever. And so when I'm have free time and I got nothing going on in my personal life, like I'm on vacation right now, you know, I power through big anime series, and that's something that I do, because I sit down and I just relax and I can just watch it, and it's very calming to me. And so if you're like me, then I wouldn't even touch the movie, because, and also if you want the classical anime stuff, then I would definitely go episodic and I would not touch the movie. But if you just want a basic glimpse, saying, hey, I want to watch this classical thing because there's a lot of history behind it and I just want a quick refresher course on it, the movie is for you. And so that's the distinction I make between the two.
Well, I think we're going to go queue up the movie and the series again for ourselves and come back after we drop some promos for a few other episodes.
Do you ever find yourself sitting on the couch late at night wondering, what should I watch?
Aimlessly flipping through streaming services, pondering as you let your cursor settle over a title, but you just can't bring yourself to commit and push play.
Well, guess what? We do that, and we made a podcast about it.
Because everybody makes podcasts, but we decided to make ours about movies.
I'm Kay.
I'm E.
And together we start a journey through cinema, where we watch a movie, sit down, discuss it,
debate it, test each other's knowledge of it, and then give our final seal of approval or disapproval.
Yeah.
So join us as we try to search the infinite web, attempting to answer the age-old question, what should we watch?
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and drop us a comment. Let us know what you think, and we'll have some interactive portions where you can join the fun.
So, pop some popcorn, pop some wine, and join us, won't you? Tune in to What Should We Watch with Kay and E.
Coming at you live, brother.
It's not live.
Coming at you.
Pre-recorded and edited.
Pre-recorded, edited, and delivered, brother.
Bye.
This is What the Smut, a podcast where we read and talk about paranormal erotica novels.
I think you mean paranormal romance novels?
How about some of both?
So you don't have to.
Hey guys, I think we should do a paranormal erotica podcast.
I guess so. I know how to read.
Why smut?
Well, for me, paranormal erotica allows us to examine things like power and sexuality, but sort of outside of our current societal norms.
And it allows me to kind of explore the way I personally feel and reflect on my own sexuality whilst reading these kinds of books.
That was a good description.
And because of sex toys.
We rate these books based on our own personal tastes.
And then we sum up the book with 5 words.
You can find us online on Facebook and Instagram at What the Smutcast and anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Let's wrap this up, people.
Who brought the condoms?
I think we're going to need a magnum.
Those are some great shows you should check out. But first, let's finish up with this one. So, Andrew, we've pretty well established here that Fist of the North Star is all about Kenshiro going around and punching everybody. Not necessarily in the face, but that is certainly included.
Yeah, that's a good, pretty much accurate description of Fist of the Northern Star.
So, I mean, naturally, you have a fighting game that comes out for it. Very unnaturally, it's a Game Boy fighter.
Yeah, that's something that's interesting, because I don't know how many Game Boy fighters were before this one, and that's something that I'm just curious about, because typically on the Game Boy, and we're not talking Game Boy Color, this is before the Game Boy Color, so we have a fighting game that's very much old school retro, and I don't know if there's another Game Boy fighter game that came out before this one.
I have done absolutely no research because I didn't even think about that until just now. And I'm pulling this all out of my butt. But I do
I didn't
know
think about it either, so we're in the same boat here.
I do know for sure that this game came out before Street Fighter 2, but after Street Fighter. So combos were a thing that had been invented, but weren't really a thing that was really good yet. And you had all of your bad fighting games, or even quote-unquote fighting games, however you want to look at it. Like, you had Karate Champ had come out, you had, I can't even think of what some of the other horrible early ones were, because they're horrible and I never want to acknowledge their existence. But, I mean, it's early. It's just really early, and that's the main problem with this one.
Yeah, this is not a good game. I'm going to just drop it. It's nothing against Fist of the Northern Star, and I'm not trying to beat it up. And it's just, it's a rough one, is a really good way to put it. It's an expensive game, new though. This game goes for good money if it's like shrink wrap still, which is crazy, but it's a bad game.
Which is why I don't worry about buying new games.
Oh, it's so bad. So bad, this fighting game.
But it's also bad with that caveat of Street Fighter 2 hadn't come out yet. And Street Fighter 2 really is kind of the moment where fighting games became a viable thing.
Street Fighter 2 is the standard and was the new benchmark in fighting games, and it redefined the entire fighting game industry on a lot of levels, on it coming out, more console stuff, even in the arcade stuff, and even people remember Street Fighter 2. You know, when somebody says fighting game, Street Fighter and Street Fighter 2 is the go-to to drop down. This is not that.
Yeah, so we can sit here and say this is a bad game, but you do have to look at it in the context of when did it come out, which was 1989 over here in North America. So, I mean, that's... You can't give it too much crap. It's like saying that regular Nintendo game was bad because it couldn't have 3D graphics.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, though, that they did some really interesting stuff in this game where there was a story. It wasn't a very good story where you're punching through and beating up a bunch of villains that the main character basically is fighting. And so you go piece by piece by piece, and then you get like certain level up attributes. And I'll say they weren't very good, but even still having that thrown out into there and the leveling up component. And then on top of this, you also had, you know, a verse mode, which is cool. So you could fight somebody. And I'm not exactly sure how that worked, because I didn't play around with that, but I know that was in there. But then what I thought was cool, and modern day games have done this much better, but this sort of was one of the first that threw it out there, is that you had a team fight where you could pick a team, and then it's a 5-on-5, one person fighting each other, and you have to kill all your opponent's people. And so obviously if you beat somebody first, then the next fighter continues to fight, and so on and so forth. And so I thought that was a very nice touch in this game. Graphics not great, problematic, but I think a lot of concepts were introduced in this game that weren't previously introduced. And so even though I'm beating it up and I'm saying it's rough, certain things were introduced into this game that I think are super cool. I mean, I'm a big Dragon Ball Z fan, and they have all these tournament games where you have a 5-on-5 fight. And that was, you know, 25 years later, or even more so, maybe 30 years later, that concept is now being employed in so many fighting games where you have a 5-on-5 fight. And I think this is probably one of the first games that actually did that. So this game deserves credit for it.
And I mean, we can talk about the graphics all we want. It looks about as good as I would expect a Game Boy game like this to look, because it's, you can't really go in and pre-render anything or have anything with the cheater graphic ways to set up, since the developers never knew where anybody was going to be on the screen.
Yeah, and it makes it a hard game to play. Very hard to play when you have not great graphics. And it's not even their fault per se, because we're talking 89, 90. I mean, this is 30 years ago. So anything that we state as far as graphics and playability 30 years ago, this game was impressive, all things considering that it was even made and that a fighting game was done. And so if you got this game and you're, you know, 7 years old in 1990, I mean, I wasn't even born yet. So I'm 27, I was born in 93. So that should give everybody an idea here of how like old this game is. But even still, I think this game in many ways was an experiment of that fighting genre, because we had Street Fighter somewhere here, then Street Fighter 2 came after, and obviously that entire genre was still being perfected. But I think a lot of concepts were really introduced in this game that are relevant today and that are standardized today.
One of the cool things I think they did here was you had 11 different characters you could be, and it wasn't just palette swaps of everybody. So they actually had as unique of a moveset from each other as you can, you know, make with a system that only has a D-pad and two buttons.
Yeah, and I think that's super interesting as well, where you also have a lot of playability with it, where you have 11 people to choose from, and then that means that you have 11 stories more or less to go through. And look, I think certain parts of this obviously are repetitive in those things, but even though you have some different move sets and things like that, you do have, you know, 11 fights to complete, or at least 10 of them to complete, you know, if we actually go through before it sort of repeats itself to some degree, 10, 11, you know, stories to go through. It's super interesting where they at least put some thought into that, where it's not just one fight and you beat the story and then you're done and then you can play the 5-on-5 round for the next, you know, till you cry to mommy and daddy to buy you another game. You know, you actually have some replayability with this. And so I think that's super interesting. I think it's also super thoughtful of the developers. Whether they intended to do it or not is not the question anymore. It's more along the lines of, hey, we got, you know, 11 people. And if you're a fan of Fist of the Northern Star, which a lot of people were at this time because it was still relatively new, I mean, who doesn't want to play as a character from that show? And I think that's the other appeal of this game, is that you're now playing as characters that obviously have some significance to the show. And that's kind of what this game was about in many ways as well.
And this is also one of the earliest games to come over to America based on an anime or a manga that actually kept that anime and manga characterization to it. I mean, you had Dragon Power, which was obviously Dragon Ball Z, if you knew what Dragon Ball Z was, but they switched it over. You had the Golga 13 stuff, which had kind of gotten switched up a little bit from there. You had a few other things that were based on mangas that just were completely changed for an American audience, whether it be because they didn't grab the license or they just didn't think an American audience would care, so they switched it up. But this one kept its Fist of the North Star license.
Yeah, and I think that's super important as well, where I think it's nice to have that Japanese input put into it. Obviously, this is Nintendo, so Nintendo's a Japanese company, but Nintendo is very much an American company at the same time. And it's kind of nice that it actually got to keep its Japanese roots and its Japanese perspective, and even just the fighting style and the gameplay was very Japanese, very anime-like. And at this point, you know, 1990, the anime scene was very much like the Wild West, and the manga scene was very much like the Wild West, where really in 2000 things started to change, and then in 2010 things changed again, where, and then I'll briefly go through it. So in 1990 to about 2000, things were coming into America in piecemeal, and it was dub it, get it out, and then in 3 months we're going to do the next 5 episodes, dub it, get it out on VHS, and that was like a good 8 years from 1990 to about 1998. Then Funimation was for about 1998 to 2001, 2002 was very much the Wild West, and then they became what they became. But in that time period, really in 2000, things started to become Americanized, and even all throughout the 90s, it was like half Americanized, half not. And that's how you get things that were changed, because people were like, oh, let's Americanize it, let's not Americanize it, let's see what happens. And then in 2010, and really in the last 5 years, there's been more of a traditional sense that's come back into the anime and manga world. And so we now see shows and big streaming services like Funimation and Crunchyroll take a more traditional role, and even Funimation take a more traditional role on this entire Japanese stuff. And that's why we get games like Tekken and even other games that are Japanese-based stay more traditionalized and not be Americanized to the degree that they are. There's still slight changes, but it's super important that, and this game wasn't Americanized, which is sort of cool in a lot of ways. And I think in many ways it was the right move, because I think that there were plenty of people watching this show and getting it on VHS in the 1990s and 1980s when it was coming out that were like, oh man, I'm glad that this, because this show is not Americanized. There are other shows like Dragon Ball Z is Americanized, and then now it's been un-Americanized in the last probably 8 years. And so it's super important to understand that. And it's just a nice thing as an anime fan. And I think a lot of anime fans appreciate that, and manga fans appreciate when games don't stray too far away from their roots.
So one thing for me looking through this is I only know who one character is, Kenshiro. I don't know how prominent any of the other characters that you can be in the game are.
Yeah, I mean, they play roles, and they're important. I mean, these characters are significant in the anime in many ways. I don't want to ruin too much for anybody, but they are significant, some of them more so than others. There's a bunch of villains, and there's a bunch of, you know, obviously others in there, but Kenshiro is the main one. You know, that's kind of the one everybody knows, whether you're a fan of Fist Northern Star or not. But these 11 characters were chosen for a reason. They're not just one episode characters, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
They have significant roles, and I think it's super important, and it's cool. It's fun, and it's nice to do that, but in reality, you don't need to know any of these characters to play it. If you were to pick up this game today, just so everybody knows, and you knew nothing about Fist of the Northern Star, just pick a character, and you could have a lot of fun, because there's nothing that is canon about this game. Meaning that if you play this game, you're not going to ruin Fist of the Northern Star if you watch it in a year from now. And you're going to be like, oh man, I played as so-and-so, and I played as Kenshiro, and then I played as Joggy, and great. I don't really know what's going on with either of these characters, and it's perfectly fine, and you don't need to know anything about Fist of the Northern Star to play this game. But obviously, there's a reason why, and I'm pretty sure what they did is that they obviously have data and data, which characters are popular, which characters are significant, which characters are also going to sell the game, you know, and that's kind of what it is with this. And it's the same thing when we have any fighting game with a variety of characters. You know, one of the biggest fighting games out there, and I keep using it, is Dragon Ball Z. There's been so many DBZ fighting games. They have an idea of what characters are extremely popular on both the hero side and the villain side, and then they throw it at that because they know what's going to sell, and then they put certain characters on the box for partly selling. That's why Kenshiro is the biggest one on this box. And the other characters, which are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because I actually just pulled up the box. There's 5 other characters on the front of the box. Those 5 characters are sort of the most significant ones that people recognize the most.
Wait, are you saying that I can assume that Goku is an important character because he's on every single Dragon Ball Z box?
Yes, I know, it's shocking, breaking news, we're changing the game here. You know, you call off the press, right?
I'm joking, I actually do that already. I'm not that bad.
But there's a reason why those 5 characters in Kenshiro are on that box, because those are the most recognizable characters in most of Fist of the Northern Star. And then there's like 10 other games, and then there's a bunch of other characters on the box too. So these people know what they're doing. Or maybe they just took a stab at the dark. What do I know? I don't work for them, so clearly. Unless you could be taken at face value with me. I just completely discredited myself. No, in reality, there's a reason why. And so I just think it's great what they did with those 11 characters and the significance that some of these have. And it's just, it's a nice touch. It's a nice touch in many ways.
So, story-wise, what do you think this game really gets right compared to the anime and the manga?
Nothing. There is legitimately, you're just fighting through everybody. I think there is no story with this game in many ways. You know, you're fighting through, and that's kind of what I just got out of it, where it's just a fun fighting game, is what it is. It's kind of like, you know, we look at Street Fighter, and there is no story with Street Fighter in many ways. At least not Street Fighter 1 and Street Fighter 2. Is, and it's been a while, so correct me if I'm incorrect here, but I didn't get much of a story. I just got this idea that, well, we're powering up, and we're just powering through to be the very best, and we're punching through things, and that's kind of what this is. is we're fighting and we have cool moves and we have some fun stuff for an A, a B pad, an A button, a B button, and a D pad. We get a bunch of fun fighting stuff. We get to punch through stuff, which is what Fizz of the Northern Star is in many ways. I mean, I'm simplifying it also.
Yeah, but you don't really have to simplify it much. It's an early fighting game. And of course, you know, I could only find the manual in Japanese, which doesn't help any because I read about as much Japanese as you'd expect me to, which is none. But, I mean, just kind of looking through that, it doesn't look like there's much of any kind of story explanation, because this is back in the era where they expected you to read the game manuals. So they could have slipped a story into the manual and expected you to pull it from there instead of having it in the game. It's... I mean, this is me guessing just context clues and screenshots they have in the manual, but there is literally nothing that I would think is any kind of story in here.
Yeah, you're basically fighting at the end of the century, and pretty much humanity is in an apocalypse, which is the story of Fist of the Northern Star, and that you're just sort of fighting in a tournament. That's kind of what you're doing in this game, and you're fighting through pretty much all the characters that you can possibly be that you didn't choose, and then you're just leveling up, and then you're just progressing through, and then that's pretty much what you're doing, and it's, you're fighting for bragging rights is really what this is about.
Which makes perfect sense after watching the movie. Bragging rights are a big thing.
Yeah, no, and it's fun. I mean, you don't need a story with this entire, you know, game. It's not, you know, a cyberpunk, you know, 2077. I mean, it's not a story and driven game. Beyond the fact that you're sort of just fighting person A, who's a little bit weaker, then you move up to the next person who's a little bit stronger, and as you progress, those fighters become a little bit stronger. So that's as far as the story goes, is that the difficulty increases as you progress. And then, yeah, so... But it's what you expect. There's nothing to break down in that regard. It's not, you know, the legacy of Goku, which has a clear, definitive story in it. And that's a Game Boy Advance game. And the reason why I keep referring to Dragon Ball Z, because it's the easiest one to refer to, is that that game has a story. It has a start point and end point. This game is your story takes place with whatever character you choose. 10 fights later, story ends.
I mean, really, 10 fights later, what is it? You are the king of the universe, if the title of the game is to be believed?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't even know what you are anymore, because in this game, it's so confusing to some degree, but I just view it as bragging rights. I view it as bragging rights, and yet you're the best fighter out there, which is super important, because why wouldn't you want to be the best fighter? I mean, we have to analyze it. If we all could choose, we would all be princesses or really good fighters. It's one or the other. It's nowhere in between.
And what do you think this game really gets wrong compared to the anime and the manga?
You know, I don't know if it really gets anything wrong, because I think what it is that you're fighting, and obviously people who wouldn't fight each other wouldn't in the anime and the manga are fighting each other in this game. Or people who would never cross paths are fighting each other. But I don't know if that's quote unquote wrong to the degree that, because I don't think it's a fighting game. You know, in typical fighting games, you're not playing in a canon world, if that makes any sense. So you don't need to follow the same rules. So beyond certain people fighting each other, like for instance, there are two enemies that wouldn't fight each other because they're not in the same arc. They've never crossed paths before, and here they are crossing paths. And then you have two good guys that wouldn't fight each other that are fighting each other. So that's kind of one of the things that it puts people in situations that wouldn't exist in the anime or the manga. But in a fighting game, they have to exist, if that makes sense. It's kind of like Ken and Ryu from Street Fighter would never fight each other. But in Street Fighter, you can make them fight each other. But we all know that that's not part of the story. Or Chun-Li wouldn't fight Ken or wouldn't fight Ryu. But in the game, they fight each other, but that's not canon. So that's my only issue.
Any game like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat that's set up as, hey, here's a tournament kind of thing, you get around that pretty easily by, hey, the good guys are fighting because they're training. I mean, you can just kind of headcanon that real quick and be done. I mean, Dragon Ball gets around it because they have, what is it, like 12 tournaments a week going on in that world. So I can imagine anybody fighting anybody, even if it's just in a tournament setting.
Yeah, I think that's sort of just it the way it is. And I just think that, unfortunately, that's what it is. And that's what it is. And then the other thing that they just don't do well is there's no story. There is no story. There's no context beyond, hey, we're in a dystopian, crazy world, and guys, have at it and fight. I mean, I think that's the biggest complaint, is that there's no like even pretext. Like, there could have been a little bit of story thrown into this, where they could have just had, you know, like somebody appear somewhere and then like have like two or three word bubbles, and it would have given a little bit more context in it. And this game just doesn't have much of that at all. And it's like, cool, next opponent, great. Round two, cool. Fight two, wonderful. Like, that's sort of where it goes. But it's a fighting game, so I don't really see much wrong with it beyond just that. And also, I just think the moveset, it could have been more defined, a little bit better. But at the same time, you have an A and a B button. You know, I'm a privileged child where I have an Xbox controller that legitimately has four buttons, two D control buttons, and then I have like a bumper, another, I have two bumpers, and I have four bumpers, four buttons, two joysticks, a D-pad, and then I could click my D-pad buttons. So I legitimately have like 30 buttons on my Xbox controller versus two. So maybe that's why we're criticizing it.
I know, it's really hard because I'm usually over here using a GameCube controller for all these things because it just lays out nicely to match like every retro console ever made. But the only other thing I can really think of that's really wrong with this game is the violence level. And I don't think we touched on this too much. This show and manga are really violent, and that does not come across the game at all.
Yeah, this show is very violent for the 80s, where I'm a big Attack on Titan fan, and that show is just monsterly violent. And that show is very, very graphic, for lack of a better word. But this show definitely doesn't pull any punches. For an 80s show, this thing was, I don't want to say raunchy, because raunchy is not the right word. But whatever, you know, you have an extremity for what it was. And I understand there's a lack of graphics and we're not going to beat it up, but there could have been a level of violence that was thrown out there, and I don't think would have violated PG-13 guidelines or E for everyone or E for everyone 10 up. I think that it could have been raised a little bit, and I also think that since it is a Japanese game, there would have been more leeway with it, if that makes any sense. And I think that, you know, I think it's a deficit, because I didn't even think about this, and I'm just also speaking off like the cuff here, but I definitely think that there is a lack of that, because that didn't even come across my thought process when I'm playing this, where I'm like, oh, okay, cool, just because there's 10 other things that I'm worrying about. But like, now that you raise it, like, yeah, for an anime, there could have been some violence, given what property it is. Like, if it's a Dragon Ball Z game, I don't expect the violence level. But Fist of the Northern Star is extremely... when we say violent, it's not like, you know, somebody's getting cut in half. But there's some hard-hitting punches and things happen. And some explosions and things like that in this anime and manga. You know, there's some ripping of people's stuff in other ways as well. So, Like people punch through like people's stomachs. In case anybody wants to go watch this now, but yeah, there's a lack of that stuff. Like, at least in Mortal Kombat, you have those finish him, kill them scenes, and there could have been something even toned down to like a tenth of that would have been a nice touch on this game. It would have been more true to Fist of Northern Stars MO.
I mean, all you really needed, I think, was some of those post-fight little cutscenes. And it could have just been to the Street Fighter 2 level, where it's just, you know, you can tell they've been beat up and they say whatever thing they're going to say, and then you go on to the next fight. Plus, that solves two problems because it also is a good chance to throw some story in there.
I agree. And I just think that they got lazy with it, or maybe they were over budget, or maybe they didn't meet their budget. I think it just goes down to laziness and budgeting. And I think there was a lack of both of them. Or there was capturing the laziness, and then there was a lack of saying, hey, we got to get this game out. It's a licensed product. They're paying a license fee on it, probably. And great, we only have X amount of money to do this, and we've run out of money. It's probably most likely what happened with this game. They said, hey, let's just get this into America. It's not the greatest game, but we got to get it out the door. And we got 13 other games we're making this year. So be it. You know, it's one of those three. That's probably why this game is the way it is.
So if you've got somebody who wants to get into Fist of North Star, would you hand them this game as a bit of a primer course?
Probably not. Probably not. I would probably tell them to run for the hills with this game and say, hey, you know, just watch the movie, watch the anime. You know, there's a secondary anime series that came out that's, I think, 13 or like 24 episodes. Maybe watch that. You know, read the manga, not this game. It's just not the right position to get into. Not to mention that it's also difficult to find. It's really a pain in the butt to find. And that's the other thing. And also, it's obsolete technology, where it's a Game Boy game from over 30 years ago. I mean, let's be realistic. There's better things to play than this. And you're just going to wind up frustrated. So I would say anime, manga, movie is your best route if you want to get into Fist of Northern Star.
What, you don't just have a Game Boy sitting around your house?
I have a Game Boy Color. I don't even know where to find a Game Boy. I don't. I would love to find a Game Boy that's in good condition and that works, but yeah, I don't really have a Game Boy. I haven't actually ever seen a Game Boy, ever, which is crazy. I would love to buy one, but I digress. And like, there's so many cool things with Nintendo and all sorts of cool like Nintendo stuff. And look, I love my Xbox and everybody, and I'm not going back to Nintendo, but Nintendo was a great part of my childhood. It's an amazing part of my childhood. And I love the fact that they bring stuff like this over and there's cool stuff like this out there. So it's super. I mean, I think it's great that they also brought a bunch of anime games over. And they still do in many ways. And all these companies do. And Nintendo in many ways was a pioneer of that. Before, you know, because Xbox didn't exist when this was around. You know, PS4, PS5 didn't exist. Sony didn't exist with their system and PlayStation. You know, Nintendo was like kind of bringing a lot of this stuff over. And so it's really cool that this was even thrown out there.
So, Andrew, it's been great talking to you about this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
You can bother me on my website, which is popanimecomics.com. I write articles there. I haven't written anything in a while, so probably not the best place to go. But it's got a bunch of my social media links, so that's for starters. And then secondly, you can find me on Pop Anime Comics Lounge. It has my shirt that nobody can see. But it's just type in Pop Anime Comics Lounge. I have 124 interviews there, and I have another 30 in backlog that are going to be released hopefully in the next year that I'm working on. And then I just started a second podcast in March of this year due to COVID-19, and I actually just completed 90 interviews in 9 months. And that's on Facebook Live. So all that stuff, or I think there's 86 of them, and then 4 were pre-recorded for a variety of reasons. And that stuff's on YouTube under Pop Anime Comics, as well as a bunch of other cool stuff on my YouTube channel. And then my Facebook page, which is where a lot of my interviews get to, is at Pop Anime Comics on Facebook. And so that's all live. That's up there And then also I do a lot of presentations, or I used to, at cons, and I got lived up there. So if you want to see a presentation on anime, comics, old school anime, comic book stuff, I do that as well, and I stream them from cons. So you get a con quality presentation directly given to you in your home. And so when cons reopen and I'm at cons, you can check that out. But it's Pop Anime Comics on Facebook. And yeah, you can just watch that, and there's 86 of them up there, and then all that other stuff is also on YouTube at Pop Anime Comics. So anything Pop Anime Comics is mine, unless I owe you money, and if that's the case, I'm going to quietly walk away as if I broke something in a store. And we all know, because we've all done it, and I will quietly walk away.
As always, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because it's so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
I agree. Spelling is hard. It's very hard.
Even when it's just three simple words that you squish together, it's just, for some reason, I want to change the spelling up a little bit. That's why I copy and paste. As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast. That is easily where I am the most active. You can also head on over to PlayComics.com, where you can find all these episode links. You can find comic reviews that some other of my friends and I have written all up there, and links to all the other social media stuff. And if you want to check out some other wonderfully geeky shows, head on over to GunnaGeek.com, where you can check out some of the geeky shows that they have over there. They're kind enough to let me be a part of their network, and so, you know, go check them out. They're cool people. And if you like the music we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to SoundCloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, or manga, or whatever, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
He's going to go get one. He's getting one right now for everybody who
just pulled out.
I've now seen a Game Boy. My journey's been complete. And by the way, it's like gray. It looks so obsolete. It's got red buttons. It's got like a dark gray pad. And it's super interesting.
The screen is doing weird things because of the green screen I'm using for the video that people will never see. So it's really like
I'm describing a game
calculator,
point.
But it's such a beautiful little system, and I love it.
I'm not against it. It's just I played on a Game Boy Color. Again, I was born in '93. I got a Game Boy because I wanted to play Pokemon Red and Game Boy Color. And you know, I love my Game Boy Color, and I almost just bought a Pikachu Game Boy Color because I have money right now, and I just got a gift card, and I'm looking at possibly getting one of them. I actually lost it on eBay, which was annoying, but I digress, because it's cool. It's a Pokemon Game Boy. Who doesn't want one of those?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I have any of those sitting around here.
It's adorable. It's like Pikachu, and like it's like yellow, and it's so cute.